our role is to bring more of both of those worlds together and to try to make entrepreneurs think a little bit more like the conservationists and vice versa.
Welcome to The Regeneration Will Be Funded. I'm your host, Matthew Monahan, and in this series, we're having conversations about regenerative finance, technology, and our living planet. How can we build an economy that's in service to life? Brought to you by Ma Earth. You can find all of our conversations at maearth.com. Thanks for joining us. Today's guest is Kevin Webb, co-founder and managing director at Superorganism, which bills itself as the first venture firm focused on biodiversity. In this discussion, we talk about the recent launch of Superorganism, Kevin's journey into this space, what he sees as the opportunities, and why biodiversity is so important. I appreciate Kevin for addressing some of my questions and concerns about the fundamental model of venture capital to ensure that we align the economic incentives at the outset for long-term generative outcomes. This conversation took place at New York Climate Week. Let's dive right in with Kevin Webb. Today we are here with Kevin Webb. Kevin is the managing director at Superorganism. Thanks, Kevin, for doing this.
Absolutely.
Just wrapping up Climate Week. How's it been?
It's been amazing. I am currently probably about 90% coffee by bloodstream volume. I think that's probably about right. It's been unreal. This was my first Climate Week. I attended a little bit last year. We actually hosted an event in Central Park for a number of conservationist friends, VCs, and we had a 10% chance of rain, got completely rained out, wound up moving the entire thing to my apartment where we were not ready to be hosting anyone. I actually left midway through the party so that I could fly to Sweden for a different conference. It was absolutely nuts, but it meant that I missed most of it. And the observation I have is you can have an entire Climate Week that is completely different from anyone else's. And so my view is everyone was talking about nature. That was the clear theme that showed up over and over again. But I was deliberately hanging out with those people.
Right.
And someone else could have an entirely different view.
Right. And I've been on a few different WhatsApp groups this week and, you know, seeing all the schedules flying around and so forth. But you organized a WhatsApp group that's been one of the most active and vibrant. Tell me more about that.
Yeah. Well, one of the things we think is really, really important is to bring conservationists into this movement and to use their expertise and to build up trust between them and startups who are trying to do the right thing, but maybe don't have that historic context and connection. And so one of the things that we try to do is really make it an inclusive, safe space, high energy, fun. I feel very strongly that this work is vital. And that's no reason. There's no reason why it can't also be a source of joy, right? Mm. And so we try to bring that into the WhatsApp group. And we had, I think, about 150 people there from some large companies and people who are actually doing in the field work with indigenous people. A number of our founders were there, a number of VCs we work with. And it was just, it was good energy. And it made the yesterday at the event we were at, I had a couple of founders who I hadn't met in person yet come up and say, thank you so much for doing that. Last year I went and I felt completely lost. And this felt like I was welcome wherever I went.
Yeah, because there's so many events at Climate Week and you don't kind of know who's going where and what's happening. And so just a little bit of wayfinding is extremely helpful. Yeah. And this theme of bringing conservationists to the conversation, it sounds similar to how I saw some of the press releases and some of your words around bringing conservationists onto the cap table.
Yeah.
As part of the launch, what, last week or 2 weeks ago, the public launch of Superorganism. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Billing itself as the first biodiversity venture capital firm, which seems to be very well received. What's it been like?
Oh, God. The launch was overwhelming and humbling. I think I've been working on this in some way, shape, or form for the past 5 years. And when I left my previous role in more traditional venture capital, I had this idea of doing venture capital for biodiversity, and that resulted in a lot of blank stares from friends who were conservationists and friends who were venture capitalists. And so it really felt like a culmination of years of work, of getting to know people, building trust, showing that there's actually a quite a bit of deal flow and a number of founders for whom this is the reason why they get up in the morning, right? With an entrepreneur, you want outsized conviction and energy and someone who's going to run through walls. And for many people, there's little that's more compelling than working to combat the sixth extinction on our timeline. So scaling back to the launch, when we put that out there, I didn't know what we were going to get back. And we got picked up in a number of different journals. We got inbound from all around the world, a number of people who reached out asking if we're hiring. We unfortunately are not hiring right now, but tons of startup founders and then so many different VCs who came out of the woodwork and said, we're also interested in this space. Can you tell us what you're doing? Can you share what you've learned so far? And so we do view ourselves as first, but we will fail if we are the last. And so one of the things we really want to do with this is show that there is excitement and enthusiasm and they're there.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a lot of different questions I want to ask you about the broader space, but zooming in on Superorganism.
Yeah.
Take us through a bit of how the firm is structured. What is it and how is it going so far?
Yeah. Yeah, so we're a traditional venture capital firm. We are as plain vanilla as you can be in terms of the overall structure because Tom, my co-founder, is going to be mad at me for saying it this way, but our weirdness is our focus on biodiversity. And we believe very strongly that much like climate change cuts across the entire global economy, so does biodiversity loss. And that informs where we're looking for deals. So we look in three big buckets. Bucket one is anything that touches literal extinction drivers. So these are things that don't neatly fit into the climate change environmentalism category. So things like invasive species, pollution, habitat loss, overexploitation. So when there's a startup that is making a big dent against one of those things by operating in one of the most harmful industries, so either helping them to transition with better alternatives or by directly competing against them, using new technologies, new efficiencies is a creative way to disrupt an industry that maybe hasn't changed for 100 years. We get pretty excited about those. The second big leg of where we focus is the overlap between climate and biodiversity. So we could spend a lot more time on that, but it's an incredible time to be deploying capital into startups that benefit climate. Our lens is we look for the companies that are also benefiting nature. So think nature-based solutions, think things like adaptation. Biodiversity can be an incredible tool for helping us to adapt to climate change that's probably at this point baked in the near term. And then we also look at things like wildfire, soil, water, where there's a climate story and also a nature story. So the last big area where we spend a lot of time is enabling technologies. So things like AI, satellites, genomics, we use conservationist expertise to help us see what's real, what's useful, what's good. And we try to get it into their hands a lot sooner as these companies. So think of them like being the next generation Planet or Esri or Oxford Nanopore as they're going after much broader market opportunities. We kind of think about these businesses as being potentially like Robin Hood models almost, where the real capital is coming from other industries, but we can hopefully do a lot of conservation good with them sooner. So that's where we focus in terms of the overall firm setup. It's a two-person team. I'm one half of them, of the team. We also have a mentors network. So 25 people, really incredible conservationists, academics, entrepreneurs who are designed to help us see deal flow and then also provide support to the founders as they deal with challenges that are pretty unique, first of their kind. And then we're setting aside 10% of our firm's profits for ongoing conservation work.
Got it. And so given its fairly modest size in terms of overall, you know, number of people and assets under management, my understanding is you're not trying to lead rounds, but really co-invest alongside different leads.
Yeah. So at this point, we are usually not leading. We're not taking board seats, but we do want to be about the closest thing to a conservationist on the cap table. So we're designed to be really complementary. And as you heard from our focus areas, none of those startups may be calling themselves biodiversity startups explicitly. There's there's not downstream capital by virtue of us being one of the first VC firms to do this full time. And so our approach is really designed to be complementary. So we play nicely with climate firms, with ag tech firms, with synthetic biology firms, and we want to be the second, fourth biggest check in around typically and provide help on these axes and kind of be a stamp of support saying that we vetted this. It has real impact and real intention.
And so what would be an average range check size, just to help me put it into context?
200 to 500K, pre-seed seed.
Pre-seed seed, so how did you get into this work? You know, what's been your journey in terms of getting here?
So I started out in more traditional venture capital. So I was on the founding team of the Web Investment Network. We did marketplaces, enterprise software, fintech, security, a lot of things that feel pretty divorced from what we're doing now. But you might be surprised how many similarities there have turned out to be. So while I was there, I worked with a lot of amazing companies. So groups like Ironclad and Turo and Verkada and Goat, Sneaker Marketplace. Really, really amazing founders who I saw from the very beginning stages, and I saw the amount of change that they were able to drive within 8-10 years, right? Companies that went on to IPO from the very earliest stages. And I love the team. I love the work. I love the approach. I did a lot also on the community side of things. And it was really just starting to take meetings with companies that were working on stuff that connected more to my long-term passion and interest. So I went to undergrad, focused on human biology, so humans, a changing environment, and infectious disease. That turned out way more relevant than I think I or my parents thought it would be to what the world has been like in the past decade. But it was really just cobbling together the classes that I always thought were most fascinating, and they dealt with evolutionary history and how we as humans are operating within ecosystems and always have. And I started seeing startups that were telling a story that was similar and related. And so they touched climate, sustainability, food, synthetic biology. And I realized that the through line of the companies that I was most drawn to was that they were working toward this future that could potentially work for humans, however many we're going to end up having, but also nature. And when I realized that there were enough of them to spend time on and that venture is something that can do certain things very well, I wanted to take all of my time, my resources, my connections, and put it toward those kinds of startups. So I quit. I moved across the country. I started at Columbia for a Master of Science in Sustainability Science, did the same thing as undergrad and cobbled together the classes that I thought were most relevant. So a whole bunch in the conservation department, climate change, agriculture, future of cities. And then I started angel investing. So I took savings from companies that had exited back at my old fund Win, and I started deploying it to see if there was deal flow, to see if people would take my money individually, and to really see how different were these startups from the ones I had worked with before. And the thing that came up time and again was that they interface with the real world. And they're butting up against ecosystems. And there are very few VCs who do come from that kind of conservation background and mindset. And not only is it important to bring that to the table, you also gain from having that kind of context and awareness and ability to de-risk companies that are dealing with challenges that might seem unusual within Silicon Valley, but are actually fairly rote within that community. And so with my little bit of network, I was able to go to work in some pretty unique ways. It was a lot of what drew me to my co-founder, Tom. So I could talk about Tom if that's useful.
Please.
Yeah, great. So Tom's amazing. Tom is one of a very small handful of people I have met who started as an in-the-field conservationist, so doing coral reef work, doing animal rehabilitation. And then he flipped into being at a startup. He was one of the very first hires. He was the wear-all-hats guy early on at the company as they grew to millions in revenue. And then he merged the two. So I met him when he was at a group called Conservation X Labs. They would also be amazing guests for you. Conservation X Labs is one of a small handful of places where if you're a conservationist, you're technology-minded, you're probably going to wind up filtering through there. And Tom was heading their community. He was working with a lot of the teams from all around the world. I found his background really interesting, so I reached out, and he took a call from some strange guy who was in grad school thinking about biodiversity investing. Mm. We hit it off. This was 2019. We stayed in touch. 2021, it was about time to level up from angel investing. He was thinking about his next steps. And we really started brainstorming on how would you build a portfolio here? How would you think about telling this story? How would you bring people in? And it's been just really tremendous to see his expertise put to work as we help our founders.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for sharing that. I mean, it's helpful to hear your journey also in the context that this is many years in the making.
Yeah.
And, you know, we hear about a lot of money flooding into climate tech VC at the moment. And so for folks trying to kind of filter who's coming at it from what level of experience and expertise, I think that's a useful introduction. I'm also curious about this name, Superorganism.
Yeah.
And just want to really salute your design team or agency, whomever did that. Yeah, they did a really exceptional job. We were passing around the website, and it's so hard to find design in this space that feels fresh and different and engaging. And you guys did a really nice job with the website.
Awesome. Well, the first thing I would say is credit where credit is due. That belongs to Goodside Studio. So hi, Jess and Danielle. And then to Hunter Thompson at Kinetic. So Tom and I started working together. We had kind of a code name that we were using, Abound Ventures, for a while. Liked that. It was kind of this abundant world that we were hoping to head toward, but it was a little bit dry. Mm. We spent weeks, months in brainstorming as we were learning to invest together and work with founders together. And we were pretty close to calling ourselves Wildlife Ventures, of all things. And I was pretty excited about it. If you're going to be the first biodiversity venture firm, why not pick something like wildlife? And Tom was coming around to it. And we had a call with one of our mentors, David Lang, who now runs Experiment. So we had a call with him, and he was like, I get where you're going with it, but please no. And his point, which I think was right, is that the story of traditional conservation over the last 100 years or so, there have been many, many wins, but it's also been overwhelmingly the story of loss, mm-hmm. right? We've lost 69% of wildlife populations on our watch. Mm-hmm. And conservation organizations are some of the most important groups on the planet, and they're also deeply underfunded. And so no small wonder that we're struggling. And his point was, you say that and I immediately think about these things. And we need to have more motion toward what's possible, what could be doable if we really put our minds and our technologies and our expertise to work toward this potential future. Mm. And we got off the call with him, and I was super annoyed because he was right. And I went and took another meeting. And by the time I came out, Tom had gone through my little library of books, and he had written out on the whiteboard Superorganism in big, big letters. And then I was also really annoyed because I knew it was great. And then we had a long period of time where we had to get used to this idea. You know, mm-hmm. it's kind of a mouthful. We did a ton of work just looking at, you know, tide pools and all these different species that we connected with. We tried to make it work. It turns out the venture landscape is littered with things that are green and blue and mm-hmm. aqua. And we just wanted something that felt different and mm-hmm. weird and as rich as biodiversity itself is. And we loved it. And then the branding studio had really, really leaned into it with us and came back with a bunch of different permutations, had to figure out what felt right, and that's where we landed.
Nice. And I guess, you know, the possible concern people might have with the name, just to linger there a bit longer, would be that, you know, we have this very anthropocentric view on our relationship with the world. And, you know, we've kind of elevated human status above all other species in a way that's obviously causing a lot of problems. Is Superorganism a specific nod to kind of aspiration for human to be a positive keystone species, or is it more just a fun kind of kitschy name that can, you know, help differentiate you in the VC landscape, or any other thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think the more time we live with it, the more true it feels. Mm. And there was a final exam in my evolutionary paleobiology class, and it asked what were the most important evolutionary milestones in the history of life on Earth. And my very last one was the evolution of people. And I talked about it in the context of what we have done to the planet in a harmful way, but I also talked about it in the context of, look, we are the first species to be able to look at the entire ecosystem and understand it, right? There's still so much to learn, but we're less than 200 years out from understanding the history of evolution or the possibility of evolution. We only just understood the idea that things could go extinct in the 1800s. We only understood the idea that things could go through mass extinctions, 70s, 80s. So this is all still very recent. And we are at a point where our capacity, our understanding, our technologies, I refuse to believe this idea that we can only be harmful, and we are animals ourselves. We were produced evolutionarily through working with ecosystems all around the world. And I just think that superorganism stands to that imaginative possibility. And then I think in terms of our overall vibe, it speaks to the everyone is welcome. Everyone needs to be part of this. This is not one group. This is a movement.
And in the fullness of thinking about the arc of human history, how do you think about cultures and, you know, prior civilizations
that
may have, you know, not necessarily had such fancy tools or, the current population size, but may have had a much more harmonious relationship with the planet? And I guess I ask that because it does feel like the narrative arc in this kind of techno VC space is very much absent of a lot of recognition of historical cultures. And obviously from a conservation and environmental movement, you know, the prominence and influence of indigenous peoples is very front and center. Commentary?
When people talk about technology, particularly VCs, Silicon Valley types, myself included, usually you're thinking about things like AI, computers, internet sites, all of that kind of work. But technology is actually much broader. And there isn't a human culture on this planet that isn't using technology. And one of the things that I really, really hope we could do with this movement and this next leg is to integrate all of it, right? It's one of many failures over the past several hundred years that as Europeans moved into different parts of the world, removed people from their lands, all sorts of horrible, horrible activities. We didn't lean on the expertise of people who had lived experience on lands in different parts of the world, right? And so we need to bring everything that we have to figure out how to live in a more sustainable world. And I think the central challenge of what we are dealing with, both on climate and on biodiversity, is how do we, as a global species, we're connected everywhere now, for better or worse, we're figuring that out. How do we live in a way that is sustainable? And to me, biodiversity and the health of biodiversity is probably one of our truest metrics of if we're doing so in a sustainable manner. No matter how much our technology changes or the way that we live changes, if nature is surviving and thriving and growing, then we're probably doing something right. And I think we just have a ton to learn there.
Yeah, because I mean, it's commonly referenced that most biodiversity is actually on indigenous lands and territories. A lot of that, obviously, in kind of equatorial regions, the Amazon rainforest, and so forth. And you know, the types of practices that have been culturally used and maintained for thousands of years are not just as simple as don't cut the trees down. You know, these are highly sophisticated cultures that have integrated a relationship with nature,
of course,
that we're only beginning to try to grasp at and maybe only beginning in our current contexts to listen to or to be humble enough to even look to. And so, you know, to, I guess, bring a biodiversity venture capital firm into the forefront as the first, you know, VC focused on this arena, I hope that, I hope that we really do make sure that's a big part of the conversation.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so, you mentioned the 69% statistic that comes from WWF, the Living Planet Index. And you mentioned kind of the integral nature of biodiversity to the survivability of our species. Any other high-level framing, especially folks who are still maybe coming newer to the concepts of biodiversity, of what you've learned and why you're deciding to put so much of your life's attention in this arena?
Yeah. I think much like talking with climate scientists, when you talk with conservationists who have been doing this work for decades and have seen places that they have studied and loved go away on their watch, it's bleak. It's it's real and urgent, and it doesn't feel that way because we are so distanced from the materiality of what surrounds us, right? And I think while there are parts of the world that are fairly well protected, one of the consequences of our interconnected economy is that we have moved a lot of production of some of the most ecologically harmful activities toward parts of the world that aren't as well protected. And that's not to say that their ecosystems are not vital or important. It's just something that we have to work on and bring visibility to. There's a lot of ways to slice up the biodiversity crisis, right? One of the most stark to me is the percentage of all mammalian biomass on Earth. It's something like 4% of that is wildlife, right? And that includes whales, elephants, giraffes, all these things that you think would be a more material part of it. And it's the rest of it is essentially 2/3 are domestic animals and us. And it's resulted in a lot of land use changes that have driven and contributed to a lot of extinction.
A lot of cows.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cows are great, but...
We have cows on our farm. I love cows, but yeah, we have a lot of cows on this planet.
Yeah.
Domesticated cows.
Now that's a whole tangent. but yeah, so the point is that we've lost a lot on our watch, and it's not just necessarily on our watch. We talk about that 1970s stat, but it's an arc that has threaded through a lot of human history in a lot of different places, right? We've seen a lot of megafaunal extinctions since the beginning of our existence. And we, you know, I think traditionally we've thought about progress and nature as being enemies. And I think there is valid lived experience for both entrepreneurial, business-minded people, and then also the conservationists on the other side of that. And that was one of the things I had to start realizing as I was trying to live in both spaces. So you talk from a business mindset, and conservation can show up as extra hassle, extra paperwork, extra steps in the way of doing the thing that you want to do for the sake of your shareholders or whatever else you have to do for the sake of the business. As a conservationist, it's really hard to look at one of those particular places on the world that has lost so much wildlife biodiversity and not point the finger at the companies that are probably largely directly responsible and to feel distrustful of that entire economic mechanism that is not taking the value of those ecosystems into account. Extremely valid lived experience. And so I think we have all kind of accepted this idea that we can have nature or we can have businesses. And that may be true, but I think there are enough businesses that are working in a way that is designed to be ecologically positive from the outset that it's possible that maybe we can actually put some businesses to work. And I really, really hope that we can, that our role is to bring more of both of those worlds together and to try to make entrepreneurs think a little bit more like the conservationists and vice versa.
Yeah. Well, we have to, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think it gets also to the heart of like, we are not separate from nature.
Not at all.
You know, so the economy, these businesses operate within the natural laws of the universe and on a planet that is shared in context. And I mean, that's really the heart also of our inquiry as an interview series of trying to talk to folks across different domains and disciplines,
right?
Because we do continue to see that there are a lot of silos, and those silos are understandable. But you know, we're all going to have to join hands and figure this out together. And I think Part of our theory of change is if we can develop empathy about where people in other silos are coming from and what their lived experience and context is, yes, that somehow that shared understanding will result in a better collaborative, you know, empathetic type of context in which we can figure these things out, and reform the precepts of the kinds of radical shifts we're going to have to make on this planet.
Yeah.
So I would love to unpack a bit of why people from a conservation or nature lens tend to be skeptical of maybe people operating the business and the finance space. I mean, it seems that part of it is because we have, a long-standing body of evidence that the destruction that's happening on the planet is in many cases under companies' watch, private enterprise watch, for-profit incentive, for-profit motive. And so, can we really just make companies a bit better? Or, if that company acts a bit more ethically, then things will work out okay. If the rules and the logic of the system are fundamentally the same, what would you say to that?
Yeah. Well, first, to go back to an earlier point, we're big fans of the work that Partha Dasgupta is doing, and believe, just like humans are not separate from the ecosystem, we are not anything but animals that are capable of incredible things, but we are still connected both with our histories and the way that we're operating. Same thing with our economy, right? Mm-hmm. Our economy is not this magical abstract thing that somehow is divorced from our planet. It's built upon our planet's infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And so, that's something that I think we need to do a better job of integrating into our economic assessments. Mm-hmm. So where I think the world needs to go on this is, if we have this overall global macroeconomic picture and nature is currently categorically undervalued, we need to start having that show up. And that needs to show up in the prices of objects. It needs to show up in the valuation, how we think about GDP. Some of the most biodiverse rich places on the planet, that doesn't show up in terms of how we think about their value. And that hopefully changes on our watch. Mm. So let's think about what a startup has to go through, right? They're starting from nothing. They have to build a business. They have to make enough noise. They have to be able to attract capital. They become an engine that just has to move forward. Mm. And in that mindset, there's not always a lot of time to be curious, to spend tons of time with people who have maybe invested years, decades of their lives into place-based work. Mm. That some of that context can be missed. I think we also can have a little bit of hero worship. It's very tempting to say, I'm here, I'm going to save everything, you're welcome. And for the people who have actually been doing this work for their entire lives, that's probably not going to resonate. Mm-hmm. And so there's got to be a little bit more curiosity and empathy and humility from the part of founders who are getting into this world, mm-hmm. right? And what I hope that they understand is that there is reason for some distrust there, right? Mm-hmm. Companies that maybe have made pronouncements, but companies are not one person. They are a body of many, many people with different objectives. The commitments of a company at one time can change over time. They are obligated to report to their shareholders. And if the thing that they're doing that is more ecologically positive doesn't ultimately show up in better net revenue in a given quarter, that's going to be heads that have to roll, right? Mm-hmm. And they're going to be at risk from activist shareholders and things like that. Mm-hmm. So again, conservationist experience, extremely valid and lived, and there's reason to be distrustful. And yet at the same time, I think we need to be curious about what startups can do well. Mm-hmm. And what's the role that they can play in helping to take some of the pressure off of the really, really needed conservation work. Mm-hmm. And I think we could do that through looking systemically at what are the industries that are really driving extinction? How can we be as cutthroat as possible mm-hmm. at reimagining them and trying to avoid some of that harm in the first place? Right now, there are plenty of opportunities for businesses to just figure out how to be profitable and use biodiversity as a lens to come up with creative solutions. So mm-hmm. case in point, we're in a company called Inversa. Inversa is making high-end luxury leather out of invasive species. So for a major luxury retailer, the story there is you're getting something that is beautiful, it's durable, it's got an incredible marketing story. Mm-hmm. And it just so happens that by paying them, they are now able to pay people to sustainably harvest lionfish, invasive python, Asian carp over the course of years in an enduring, long-term kind of way, mm-hmm. which is super, super important. There have been lots of initiatives before that are maybe government financed. Again, that can change, or that are trying to harvest these for food, at which point you're competing against all of these other feedstocks, and it's very difficult to pay a premium for people who have to do really, really difficult physical work to mm-hmm. get to these species.
Right.
Inversa turns that on its head.
Yeah, so I mean, what I hear you saying, like, so in the New Zealand context where I live, there's a lot of biodiversity loss due to invasive species.
Right.
And we don't have market pricing that incentivizes a lot of the trapping and pest control that we need to do.
Sure.
And so Inversa, being a portfolio company I'm not familiar with, but as an example where using the venture capital style startup model, we can help create market incentives to achieve biodiversity aims, align kind of conservation incentives with financial incentives in a way to address these kind of linchpin key issues that are causing extinction across the web of life. So I think that makes sense. I guess, you know, I just want to kind of parade a couple other like objections that I hear or potential objections that folks might have. So another one, you kind of spoke to like, the hero worship founder, maybe slightly hubristic, coming in going, I'm going to solve all the world's problems. And you have the conservation field going, okay, you know. Another one is this techno-utopianism, you know, that like the next gadget is going to solve everything. And great, now we have a new tool. And so therefore, you know, this is going to save the world. Maybe, you know, I don't want to make it super black and white, but like contextualize where we are in the arc of technology, why you think that that is important and matters, but also how you would address the concern that like, if we just keep going after the new gadgets, we might just continue to put ourselves in position of being able to create new ways to go extinct and not actually solving maybe some of the other aspects of either culture, education, or social change.
Yeah. Oh God, this is
just
really fun.
Giving you some softballs.
I love
here.
This. Yeah. nature itself is technology, and we are at a very exciting time in our history where we now have technologies that are beginning to be complex enough where we can actually understand all these things that we have been so lucky to inherit. Mm. Right. So again, going back 100 years, did not have the capability of understanding the genetic sequences of species around the planet. We barely understood how many there were, and we today still have so much to learn from a pharmaceutical lens, from an ecosystem lens. We're rediscovering so many species that have a role to play in the carbon cycle, and we're putting that to work in really creative ways. We are not leveraging the world's incredible natural technologies the way that we can. Mm-hmm. If you were to ask me what's my true north, it's that I want a world that is more interesting. Mm-hmm. And there's very little that is more interesting than biodiversity itself. And so if we can leverage certain tools really well, which again, conservationists have always been doing. So looking at genomics, looking at satellites, looking at AI. If we're able to leverage those in service of this biodiversity picture, I think it's pretty exciting. I don't think about us working toward one possible future. I think about us working toward the preservation of many possible futures. And our startups are showing what is possible and saying that, yes, this idea that humans or nature, there's going to be one of them. That doesn't have to be the case. And there are people who care and are working on it. And ultimately, you know, we think about conservation as being just preservation of what we have. Life moves, life evolves. And our job is to make sure that we have as many species that are able to seed whatever possible future the Earth heads into.
Mm-hmm. Great. Okay. And then my other last, like, I guess, objection.
Right.
Is a concern with the venture capital model over the long term.
Yeah.
And specifically, my concern is that I believe that startups and early stage investing can mobilize resources and capital formation in extraordinary ways.
Yep.
And I believe that it can result in a velocity of innovation that we don't currently see from the nonprofit sector or the government sector. And it's not to say that it's impossible to do things in those sectors, but in terms of just where innovation can actually happen, the technology venture capital ecosystem is extremely enticing in those respects.
Sure.
I ran a venture-backed company. I've seen the benefits of that relative to things like philanthropic funding or grants. The critique I am also persuaded about in the capitalist context is that a lot of times once companies hit a certain size and maturity and stage, they cause so many problems.
Yeah.
And when we think about, you know, without picking on the people of these companies, but we think about, you know, the Monsantos and the McDonald's and the BPs and the, you know, the large scale public companies that for many years have operated from a financial logic that has resulted in so much destruction of life. How do we ensure that by pursuing a venture capital model now, we're not setting ourselves up for, well, these companies have to grow into a certain size and stage and maturity in years 10 and beyond.
Right.
And yeah, maybe the founder really meant well. Maybe we put the right corporate values on the on the posters. Maybe we, you know, pat ourselves in the back for some sort of special certification, et cetera. But does the financial logic of capitalism overwhelm the incentive structure and these things become further and further financialized and abstracted and do a lot of harm later? And if so, then those of us who are living and starting companies right now, how do we really critically examine those starting conditions? So what would you say to all of that? And I know I've given you a lot of big questions.
Well, first of all, I think it's a really good question to be asking. Mm-hmm. I do think about, is there such a thing as maximum ethical value that a company could have? Mm. And that's possible, right? At a certain point, you continue to be obligated to your shareholders to grow. I would say from our focus, which is pre-seed and seed, that's usually so far ahead of us and where we probably will be exiting most of our companies that I don't stay up at night thinking about that.
Right.
But it directly informs how we think about our investing, right? So we look really carefully at how does impact tie to their business model? Is this something that could be pulled out of the company, or would it fundamentally break the company to stop doing the thing that is ecologically good? Mm-hmm. We vet it with conservationists. We try to make sure that the engine of its business model will continue to push it toward that good ecologically positive direction indefinitely. Mm-hmm. Obviously, companies change, companies pivot. You can't control everything, but we do everything that we can to make sure that we feel confident about that direction and that we, when we talk with our friends in different parts of the world, that they nod, right? And they don't say, that's really what we're going for. Mm-hmm. And then if I were to step back, you know, no system is perfect. We're making this up as we go. Right. There's certain things that startups are capable of doing. And if you step back and you believe that there are real business opportunities, then I want the next CEO of Uber, the CEO of Facebook, the CEO of wherever, to be that, but for nature. And I want there to be no excuse to not set your career in this direction. I want people who care about this to be well paid. Mm-hmm. I don't want there to be a trade-off between career, between impact and career. And then if you think about what's historically financed a lot of conservation, entrepreneurs have played a pretty big role in funding some of the largest bingos of the world. So what if we took out the middleman and started with entrepreneurs that already cared and tried to build wealth for them and their investors and try to catalyze more capital? There's no way around it. There's just too little cash going into conservation work.
Totally.
And it's part of why we did the 10% commitment to ongoing conservation work.
Yeah, I appreciate you answering the question with good humor as well, because it's these problems are so big and they're unanswerable in many respects. And I do think that, you know, marrying novel skill sets in this time is so critical, and having the venture skill set and the conservation skill set, it's just not common. And right. So I think that you're providing a vital synaptic connection in the ecosystem. And it does seem, you know, having left Silicon Valley, you know, around a decade ago and coming back, I felt like a crazy person talking about climate 10 years ago. Now I feel like it's completely in vogue, and climate tech and decarbonization. And so it feels likely that biodiversity is one of those next big waves. And so you're early to it. Any other comments about kind of how are you experiencing the talent coming into this space?
Oh, yeah. So I mentioned this before. One of the soft metrics that we track is how many people we have met along the way who ended up quitting their jobs and moving in this direction. It is growing, and I love it. It's just really exciting. I feel so validated when I left feeling a little bit like a weirdo who cared about biodiversity through venture, both in the conservation lens and in the venture capital lens, to now have so many other fellow travelers. And we're really, really at the early stages of this. And where I think the world is going is nature shows up in prices, and that's going to break business models. But we have so much to work through, from biodiversity metrics to how do we financialize this? How do we make sure that we're incentivizing the right kind of behaviors? And how do we really collaborate and keep ourselves honest about where we're trying to go?
You mentioned the soft metric of people who quit their job and move into this space. What are some of the other metrics that you're paying attention to and thinking about?
Yeah, so it's the normal one. How many deals are we seeing? How much are we helping our founders? We do think a lot about biodiversity impact metrics. There's no standardization in this market right now. And so right now, what we do is we ask our portfolio companies, what are you tracking? What are you optimizing against? Usually it feathers up to UN SDG 14 or 15, so life on land, life on water, sometimes with some co-benefits. But that's candidly something that we and everyone else we know of who is thinking about biodiversity investing are working through. Nature is so different from carbon dioxide equivalent and all the things that make it wonderful, right? It's different. It's geographically dispersed, make it really difficult to say this part of the world is the same as this one. And there's so much value judgment in it.
Right. And that lack of fungibility between different places and species is one of the key objections to biodiversity credits.
Right.
You mentioned it briefly. Thoughts on that space?
I'm cautiously optimistic. We're watching a number of the different ideas, schemes coming out. My view is right now the delta between what we pay for nature and what its true value is, whether you're looking economically or culturally or through any number of lenses, is so vast that anything that we can come up with that gets us a little bit closer actually is going to break business models. There are a number of businesses that if you really took into account ecosystem impacts, they just wouldn't be profitable anymore. And that creates a level playing field for a new wave of startups that can rethink things from first principles. So I'm hopeful for biodiversity credits. I think that plays a role in it. I think there's a lot that we could do with subsidies to do the same kind of thing and just stop paying for ecologically harmful activities. Right. That would create a more level playing field. What's happening with CSRD, which is the European Union's effort to implement TNFD, which got announced this past week, essentially a voluntary framework. TNFD is a voluntary framework for corporations to start reporting their true nature metrics. And CSRD is the EU saying, it's not voluntary. You're going to have to start doing it in 2025. And when, again, nature doesn't show up as this invisible thing, it's something that you have to report against your investors. That's really transformational. Just now you've got companies that have to measure this thing, that have to face their real impacts when previously it might have been abstracted. So these things tiptoe us toward a future where nature shows up.
Right. I love this, breaking business models by valuing nature. Are there examples of industries or portfolio companies to make this more tangible of where you think things are transformational by bringing valuing nature to the forefront?
Yeah, so we talked about CSRD. One of our companies is Planet A Foods. Planet A Foods is making chocolate, but without needing cacao. And so they're using a synthetic biology process, using much more food, much more common food ingredients. And so you're able to have shorter supply chains. You're able to have more resiliency in the face of climate change. And you're also avoiding deforestation in some of the most ecologically important regions of the world. Mm. Our view is very systemic. That deforestation happens for many, many reasons, largely driven economically. But our hope is that these kinds of answers can solve for some aspect of how we produce cocoa in the future, while making sure that the things that we do produce still in a more traditional manner are as ecologically positive as possible, right? So regenerative cacao is incredible. And there's a lot of examples of that. We'd love to see that market continue to transition. Yet Planet A Foods is doing this. And in doing so, they're now competing in an industry where there have been five or six major vertically integrated cocoa growers, companies, chocolate manufacturers for the past century. And now they've got an excuse to really come in with a new technology and do something disruptive.
Nice. Kevin, thanks so much for sharing your time with us. Any final messages or words you'd like to share?
The water's warm. It's real fun. So if you're thinking about making a change, it's never been a better time.
Great. Kevin Webb, Superorganism. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. What do you think of that conversation? Leave us a comment below. To learn more about Superorganism, go to superorganism.com. It truly is a beautifully designed website. If you enjoyed that conversation, you might also want to check out the episode we did with Tom Chi from At One Ventures. Links are in the show notes. All of our conversations are available at maearth.com. Please like, share, subscribe, comment. We are still a fairly new channel, and we want to get the word out, so we appreciate all of your support. Thanks for tuning in, and I'll see you next time.